size of an ocean. Was it God to be away? And there's months when I won't see you. But I'll deal with a week, I could deal with a day. Will we always be up against the sweat of circumstance, situation? I want love to win so bad, it's making my legs run fast and fair.
This is J.D. Doyle with Out Radio, and that was Declan Bennett doing the song Love Wins from his latest CD, Record Breakup. I've been following his music for years, and I've wanted to interview him just about that whole time. And this month, the time was right, as I've captured, I think, a wonderful interview with him. You know I was impressed, as this is the first two-hour interview on Out Radio. He is so very interesting. But I think you'll find that out for yourselves. Let me give the quick bio. His website said he's a singer-songwriter who writes candid pop music for a generation steeped in therapy and conversation. I can see that. His lyrics are engaging, sometimes quite raw in their emotions, and they just draw you in. And he's had quite a diverse career, gaining initial fame in a UK boy band that garnered 5 top 20 singles. And then he was in the London musical Taboo, which was by and about Boy George. He's toured in this country in the role of Roger in Rent, and later appeared in Broadway performances of that show. And he also was seen on Broadway in Green Day's musical American Idiot. All the while, he's released 3 full albums since 2005. We'll get to all that, but I began by asking who his musical influences were growing up.
When I was growing up, when I first started listening, kind of getting into music, in kind of the, late 80s, I used to be privy to a lot of the stuff that my dad used to listen to, he used to listen to a lot of Tracy Chapman and Phil Collins and Steve Winwood and Genesis and Eric Clapton. Like, he was a big kind of into those, quite kind of lyrical, kind of rock, slightly pop kind of a sound. And so I grew up listening to all of that stuff. So and I still kind of do to this day, which is kind of nice. Whenever I go back and want to listen to music that I haven't heard for a long time, and I can put on an old, like, Steve Winwood album, and it just brings back so many memories of growing up as a kid.
Well, almost right away in your career, you went a different direction. You found yourself in a boy band.
I found myself in a completely different place. Yes, I did. Although, you know, maybe Genesis were a man band, you know. So I wasn't old enough to be in Genesis, so I thought, well, I'll do the next best thing and be in a boy band.
Talk a bit about Point Break, the name of that band.
Point Break. Well, so basically when I was 18, I had this chance meeting with this woman who was a manager, and she was looking for a third person to join her band called Point Break. And they'd already been going for like a couple of years. They'd been touring and they'd been playing music, and they'd recently signed to Warner Music maybe kind of a year before. So they were like good to go. You know, they were about to release their first single, and it was all kind of ready and ready to go. And then one of the band members got really sick and he couldn't stay in the band. So they kind of went on this mad search for somebody, and I ended up meeting her. And it happened so quickly. I mean, I was living in Coventry with my mom, and within I went to meet this woman and meet the two boys in the band, maybe on the Friday. And then on the Monday, I was moving to London, and I just finished college, and it was a really surreal kind of experience. And I think we released our first single maybe a month after I joined the band. It was really quick, you know, it was all ready to go. And then I stayed with the band for 2 years, and we did a lot of touring, and we released a bunch of singles, and we had an album out and toured all over the world. And then they just, you know, they started talking about a second album, and I just thought, you know what, I'd started to write up my own music at that point, and I was kind of getting my head around the guitar, and I realized that the music that I loved and the music that I listened to and the music that I wanted to write was a far cry from the boy band world of music. So it seemed kind of useless to me to kind of carry on and put energy into something that I didn't believe in.
It was certainly a great experience, though.
It was incredible. And that was the hardest thing, was because we really did have an incredible time. And when you're 18 years old and you get to tour the world and see all these amazing, incredible parts of the world, and, you know, and be on stage almost every night, and the performance aspect was amazing. And I really did have a good time, and I look back on it with real fondness, you know.
Do you have a favorite track from that Point Break album?
I think my favorite track would probably be Freaky Time, just because of the just because that term is so kind of ridiculous. But it was probably our most kind of liked single out of them all. And also, I had really cool hair in the video, so I was kind of happy about that.
If you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, I'll be waiting. If you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, yeah. I wanna be the one you come home to. I wanna be everything you need. Come on, lay your lips on mine. I wanna be the one to set you free. Come on, pull my body close. I won't lie you on the floor. Come on, lay your lips on mine, and let our bodies work for more. B-U-M-M-B G-R-I-N-D, bump and grind, just be mine tonight. Cause if you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, I'll be waiting. If you're looking for a freaky time,
time, freaking time, baby. You can always count on me, yeah.
So baby, get your arm over here just for a second. You're looking at me, I reckon you're checking, not respecting just what my intentions are. You want me
all the way up,
I want you halfway down. I'm gonna lay you down and make you feel all on it. Every curve, every swerve all over your body will not go undiscovered. By the end of the night is a promise I'll make. So honey, turn up the light.
B-U-M-M-P G-R-I-N-D. Bump and grind, just be mine tonight. Cause if you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, I'll be waiting. If you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, G-R-I-N-D. Bump and grind, just be mine tonight. Cause if you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, I'll be waiting. If you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, yeah. Time, baby, you can always count on me, I'll be waiting. If you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, yeah. If you're looking for a freaky time, baby, you can always count on me, yeah.
Were you out of the closet when you were in Point Break? And if so, was it known to the public?
No, I wasn't. I came out when I was 19, and I joined Point Break, obviously, when I was 18. And what happened was, I think after about a year of, we've been touring a lot, and obviously being like a boy band, we had tons of girls who were coming up to us, and every time we had interviews, they were like, oh, what's your favorite kind of girl and what's your type and da, da, da. And throughout all this I was realizing that I was gay and I wasn't out yet, but the other two lads in the band knew. I'd already told them, but I started to kind of get a bit pissed off with just being asked these stupid questions about girls all the time. So I told the boys in the band and I told my management, and then I went to Warner Music and kind of said to my A&R guy, I was like, listen, I don't want to answer these questions anymore. And I said, I'm not going to lie. And I just kind of want to be honest about who I am. And he just said to me, he said, I don't care what you are. I don't care if you're gay or straight or whatever. But he said, if you want to make an impact, you know, have a big impact when you come out, he said, rather than you releasing a statement publicly now, he said, I would wait until you are much bigger. Then you come out, it will have a much bigger impact. And I thought it was quite an interesting piece of advice, actually. I never want to deny who I am, and I haven't done, you know, for everything that I've done. And there's also something to be said for once you reach a certain point of fame or notoriety, to then use your sexuality and make a public statement about who you are and have an impact on the community can also be quite a positive thing, you know? Does that make sense?
So did you take his advice?
So I did, but I didn't make a statement because actually about 6 months later, I decided to leave the band. So I wanted a big change in my life anyway, and I grew tired of being in the band and I wanted something different. And I think when I left the band, that was when I really kind of started to feel really comfortable with who I was and being gay, and then all of my family and all of my friends knew, and it was actually a really kind of nice, refreshing new start to a new beginning.
Well, from the boy band, you went on to a different success. You were in the original cast of Taboo.
Yes. Yeah, that came about in an extremely random way as well. I left Point Break, and I went to work in a cafe on Portobello Road in London. So I went from one end of the spectrum to being in this big kind of touring boy band to you know, serving people tea in a cafe. But it felt good. It felt nice to kind of come back down to earth a little bit. And then I went to an open audition for Taboo, and I got the job. I went in, and they kind of called me that evening and said, we'd love to have you on the show. And so then that whole kind of world started, and it was amazing. I did Taboo for the whole time in the West End. I think we were there for about a year and a half, and then a tour happened after that.
What roles did you play? And I understand you played different roles during the run.
Yeah, so when I started, I played this role called Guru Dazzle. He was the kind of the Buddhist teacher at the end of the show. When George, the character of Boy George, after he's kind of came through his drug problems and then he started to get himself back on track, the show ends with him going to India, and he meets this Buddhist teacher who starts to try and enlighten him about life. So I played that to begin with, and I was understudying the role of Billy James, who was one of the lead guys, who's like the Boy George love interest. And my friend Luke was playing it at the time, Luke Evans. And then when Luke left, I took over that role, and I played that for the rest of the duration.
And I understand Julian Clary was in the cast?
Julian was in the cast, yeah.
I've loved him for many years. Please talk about him.
Julian is a blast. He is one of the most interesting, cool, funny, subtle people that I've ever met in my entire life. He has this really amazing kind of this kind of sense of character. He has this very calm, very kind of centered, he's quite quiet in a lot of ways, but then when he gets on stage and he gets in front of an audience, he this kind of like bigger version of himself kind of comes out. But he's a really, really adorable, super, super cool guy. I really enjoy Julian a lot.
I've got a lot of videos of his old TV shows.
He was incredible. Like him and Fanny the Wonder Dog,
right,
and
right.
He's been around for a long time, you know, and people love him, and he's so unique unto himself, and particularly being that kind of out gay comedian in the 80s, you know, was not necessarily the easiest thing to be, and he did it with such style and with such humor. It was just, I think he's a genius.
And I have to ask about working with Boy George.
And working with George was just a complete and utter treat, you know. He's definitely one of the most interesting people I've ever met. He taught me so much about being an artist and being a creative person and creating music. And we really bonded over, because we met obviously within the confines of the theater world, but both of us, you know, had this kind of passion for music. So we really connected on a musical level, which then ended up after the tour had finished and Taboo was done, or actually during Taboo, George did a couple of gigs and he asked me to go and open for him, and so I would play before George, which was really cool. And then when Taboo was all finished, and it was just after I'd been in the States for a couple of years, and then he asked me to come back to the UK and open for him on his UK tour, which was like a 31-day tour of the UK. And it was incredible. So I played like a solo acoustic set before, you know, he would come out with his band. And it was incredible. It was great being on, you know, sharing a tour bus and touring up and down the country with him. And he's just one of the most enigmatic, talented writers and performers that I've ever had the pleasure to work with. He's just remixed one of a new song that I've just written. It hasn't been released yet, but it's on the table for this new music that I'm working on.
Well, next, I believe, you found yourself in the States in the role of Roger in Rent.
Yes. Yeah, that kind of came about very, very strangely. After I after I'd finished Taboo, I kind of took a couple years off. I didn't really do anything for a couple years, and I got a phone call one day from an American casting director who had seen me in Taboo and had bought a copy of my album, The Painter's Ball, which is the first record that I released under Some Lad from Cov. He gave me a call and he said, listen, I saw you in Taboo and I'm one of the associate directors of Rent in the States, and we're looking for more people to play Roger, and I think you would be great for it, and there's a tour going out, and, you know, are you interested? And I said, yes, because I'd seen Rent when it came to London when I was like 17. I loved it. I thought it was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen. And I loved the music, and I loved the kind of story and the whole passion behind it. Next thing, I auditioned for them in London, and then they flew me to New York to sing for the producers in New York. And then they gave me a call and said, we want to bring you to the States and put you on this tour playing Roger. So then my life completely changed again, and I ended up here in the States, and I did the tour for a year, or for like about 9 months, and then they took me off the tour and they put me on Broadway, which was, it was amazing. I had a brilliant time doing Rent. It still to this day, I think, is my favorite piece of musical theater. I think anyone that's seen that show has been kind of inspired and touched by it, and it's just one of those pieces of art that just was always going to create this massive, massive community of people who were kind of obsessed with it because of the nature and the content of what it was.
That tour was not recorded, but here's a live performance of Declan singing one of the main songs from Rent, One Song Glory.
One song, glory, one song before I go, glory, one song to leave behind, find, one song, one last refrain, glory, from the pretty boy front man, who wasted opportunity. One song, hit the world at his feet, glory in the eyes of a young girl, a young girl. Find glory beyond the cheap colored lights, one song before the sun sets, glory on another empty life. Time flies, time dies, glory, one blaze of glory, one blaze of glory. Find glory in a song that brings truth like a blazing fire, an eternal flame. Find the one song before the virus takes hold, glory like a sunset, one song to redeem this empty life. Well, time flies, and then no need to endure anymore. Time dies.
And there's another show. What was your role in American Idiot?
American Idiot, I played one of these kids who's just kind of a directionless kid who hangs out at the 7-Eleven every night with his friends and getting stoned and drinking and doing drugs and just being a bit of a mess. it was a real kind of ensemble piece, and we all kind of played these different kids who who didn't really know what was going on with their lives. But yeah, American Idiot was awesome. That was another really cool experience.
You got to perform on the Grammy Awards.
Yeah, that was kind of ridiculous. You know, I don't think any of us expected that we'd be performing at the Grammys with Green Day. But we did. I will forever be able to say that I performed at the Grammys, although hopefully it will be for my own music next time.
I think it's just amazing you've been involved in such a string of high-profile musicals.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's not something that I've always loved musical theatre since I was a kid. You know, it doesn't, the kind of the art and the process of musical theatre is actually very similar to me as kind of going out on stage and playing my own music. You know, the two of them I treat with the same kind of approach, in that it's a performance, you know, and you're connecting music to an energy and to a physical presentation of a piece of art. There's not a lot of difference in it for me. They're very, very similar, which I love. So I think that's why I've always kind of enjoyed that musical theatre side of things. And I've just been lucky that the shows I've been involved with have been very, quite contemporary, progressive pieces of musical theatre, which kind of suits me. You know, I'm kind of into that.
Has your time in the U.S. changed the way you approach your music and your songwriting?
I don't know. I don't, possibly, indirectly, it may have. I think I'm definitely surrounded by different types of musicians here. I hear different types of music here than I do back when I'm back in England. There's definitely a different, or like if you put the radio on here, you know, I'm exposed to different kinds of music than back in the UK, which is, I don't think it's a kind of a good or a bad thing. But I think when I write music, it tends to, I definitely am inspired by, you know, other people, and I will get inspiration from all different types of music, or something on the TV, or, you know, any kind of art really is inspiring to me. So I don't know that the location of somewhere directly influences what you do, but I'm sure it must do to an extent.
I understand you're now playing the electric guitar more. Has that changed your songwriting?
That has definitely changed my songwriting. I think over the past kind of year, well, kind of past couple of years really, kind of since I started American Idiot, I was seeing all these electric guitars everywhere and being like, ooh, what does that feel like? Because I've been so used to carrying this big wooden acoustic guitar everywhere. The minute you put an electric guitar on, it makes you feel really sexy. There's no denying that the electric guitar is a really sexy instrument. And I loved it. So yeah, I started to write more with the electric guitar, and I was kind of introducing more like guitar pedals and kind of noises and sounds, and I think my writing over the past 2 years has gone, for the first kind of three albums that I put out, I was coming from a very lyrical place where I felt like I had to get these words out of me and these words out of my head, and I had to say this and I wanted to say this, and there was no getting away from the lyrics were like the focus of the music. And now that's flipped, and now my approach to songwriting recently has been more about the music. And so now I'm listening to music in a different way, and I'm kind of starting to create music first and feel what the music feels like, and be like, oh well, how does this feel to me, and how does that, what does it make me want to do, what does that sound make me want to dance, does that sound make me want to cry, does. And then I start kind of folding the lyrics into the music.
So will your next album be quite different, and are you working on it already?
I am working on it already, and it's going to be very different. It's I have introduced, even for, you know, once I kind of brought this electric sound in, I went even further than that, and I started buying these kind of little gadgets and pads and and I started using some electronic music software. And I've been introducing a much more electronic sound with kind of beats and blips and noises. And so I'm now kind of trying to take, like, I've always been, when I was young, when I lived in London, I was a big club kid. I used to go out to clubs quite a lot, and I was a big fan of house music, and I really liked house music and how that made me feel. But it was a really weird kind of dichotomy, because I would be going out into these clubs and I'd be dancing until all hours of the morning to house music. And then I would go home and then write these kind of really intimate songs on an acoustic guitar. And it was a really different, a totally different experience, but both were very much a big part of me. And with this kind of next record that I'm working on, what I'm trying to do and trying to create is I'm trying to keep the kind of power and intensity of that intimate lyrical songwriting style, and then introduce this kind of these beats and this kind of electronic, slightly more dancey kind of feel to it. So I'm taking both of the genres and trying to merge them together.
Is there a fear for an artist who kind of changes his music a little of disenfranchising his former fans?
I think there's definitely a part of you that thinks, wow, this is quite a departure from what I've been doing before. But I think any kind of real artist, the only way that you can kind of keep creating and keep creating with authenticity is to trust yourself. And if you feel, if you have this kind of passion and this desire to explore this new a new way of working, then I think you have to respond to that, and you have to do everything you can to be true to yourself and be authentic to your music and your songwriting. And I think in turn, if you do that, then even if that style of music may not be what a certain person likes, I think that they can still accept what it is that you're doing because of the way that you've done it. And potentially they might, you know, they might think, oh, I don't really like electronic music, but then they hear something and they go, actually, I really like that, even, you know. And so potentially you're kind of helping open the minds of people who may not have been so open to that in the past.
Well, I think an artist really has to create for himself. And then if the audience loves it, well, that's terrific, but the honesty has to be there.
Definitely. I think that's the thing. You just have to be honest, you know, and whatever form that takes. I think what defines me as an artist is my songwriting. I think that the style and the way that I write songs and the things that I sing about, and I think that type of way of songwriting will kind of be with me forever, you know. I think that's what I do. And then the music and the way that it's presented sonically is, it can always be an experiment, but the nucleus of the song is always there, and the drive and the honesty behind what it is that you're doing will always be there.
I'm going to go back in time just a bit for something that may be a surprise to Declan that I found, as there probably are not many folks who know about this one. He began performing as a teenager when he was just 15 in 1996, and in 1998, and this was still before he joined the boy band, he was in the National Youth Music Theater. That year, they did a production of the musical Rock Nativity, which was not officially released, and Declan had the role of Simeon and sang the song peacefully.
Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, according to thy word, for mine eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the Gentiles and the glory, of thy people, Israel. Peacefully I'll pass away. Now I have seen what I've seen today. This one boy looking like the rest, but specially blessed, has brought me joy. Peacefully, God's battle won, and the world set free by His only Son. This one light sees glory shine. He's yours and mine if we unite. Peacefully, I'll pray you live. May the people see all you have to give. This good news, spread it everywhere, for all to share, for all to choose. Peacefully, my life I live. Peacefully, for I believe.
What's this all about, Simeon? That child?
A king?
I have seen him. As the Holy Spirit promised, the Christ child.
The King of the Jews?
The Messiah.
Treason! Herod is the King of the Jews.
This king is of God.
You mean Herod is not of God?
Herod is an earthly king. This child is the King of Heaven. It was written by the prophets.
Where is he now, eh?
I don't know.
Come on, Herod must hear of this. Out of our way, old fool.
There, you got to listen to a bit of singing and acting by a young Declan.
From listening to your music, and I've been doing that for years, it sounds like you've had some painful relationships. Do you have many songs that are not about heartbreak and infidelity?
Well, actually, most of this new stuff is has moved on from the heartbreak and the infidelity, and I'm finding a different ground and a different experiences to write about. Yeah, I think I just went through, I don't know, it's like, I know a lot of artists say this, but you find it easier to write music when you're kind of having a shit time. And when shitty things happen to you in your life, the first thing you do is reach for your guitar and it become this kind of cathartic experience. But I don't know, I feel right now that I don't really have anything to say about infidelity that I haven't already talked about.
I remember a time when I went through a bad breakup, and during that time, boy, I acquired a lot of Billie Holiday records.
Yeah. Right, exactly. You know, it happens, and I think a lot of songs, you know, most songs are about some sort of a relationship and it working or not working, and they're just kind of dressed up in a different way.
I want to talk about some of your albums in particular. Some Lad from Cove, Painter's Ball. Tell me about Faithful Lover.
Faithful Lover, the song.
Mm-hmm.
So Faithful Lover it's about being in a relationship with somebody, or not even necessarily like a full-on relationship. There's kind of a humor to it, saying you know, just, it's like, I know that you're not the right person, and I know that, we're not going to be together for a certain amount of time, but right now, all I want to do is rip all your clothes off and just do things to you. And I don't need you. I know you're not going to be around forever, but just for this moment right now, just tell me that you are going to be, just so I can, you know, just so I can kind of get my head around you and enjoy you for this period of time, and then we'll be done.
Your own, and I'm driving to that skin. I love hanging off your every armor, you can tell by my grin. I can't wait to get your clothes off and explore it. I come on, I'll introduce to my friends and family and make them genuflect to my shrine. And don't speak, don't act any other way. Just do it like I told you to. Oh, just say, hey, oh, you're gonna be a faithful lover. I'll live up to every task you ask of me. I'll be the daughter of the son that you never had. You see, I'm gonna still miss on my loved one till death deletes our time. Even if you decide to fuck me over in 1 or 2 years' time. To rush into whatever on the boat to the unknown. That sticker up on my head saying my how I've grown. I can't to view those motor poles that I've heard so much about. Cause I'm pretty sure that you can satisfy me inside as well as out. And don't stall, try and be something that you're not. Just bask in all the beauty that you got. Oh, you're gonna be a faithful lover. I'll live up to every task you ask of me. I'll be the daughter or the son that you never had. You'll see, I'm gonna still miss on my loved one till death deletes our time. Even if you decide to fuck me over in 1 or 2 years' time. But I can't wait, oh, I just can't wait for a cold dark winter evening. Or when I get home, I'm really late. I can't wait for you to tear up my testosterone all night. I want willing and able and naked on the table, baby. Let's make love tonight. And don't speak, don't act any other way. Just do it like I told you to. Oh, just say, hey, oh, you're gonna be a faithful lover. I'll live up to every task you ask of me. I'll be the daughter or the son that you never had. You see, yeah, I'm gonna stand with some my loved one till death deletes our time. Even if you decide to fuck me over in 1 or 2 years' time.
Tell me about One Step Behind.
One Step Behind, I actually wrote about a friend of mine back at home, but who is someone that I adore and love. And it was one of those situations where you see people kind of taking advantage of you and taking advantage of their situation and the people around them and just causing kind of havoc and causing shit everywhere that they go and expecting other people to pick up the shit after them.
I'm not set out to provoke any little question in your head. Light the match that guides you safely to your bed. With the dragons and the gargoyles laugh like it's funny watching you. You're trying to put the boat
of your legs and one side of your pajamas. Stripping over wouldn't do any good unless you bash your head off a wall to make you see it truthfully. It's hurting me, but you still don't see. So I'll walk one step behind, picking up the pieces as you walk. Stop crossing over, cause I can't catch up. I'm thinking of giving up. You're running now. How do you suppose I find you? I think it's time to stand and label you with the rest. Cause you've lost your grace and purity that stood you as the best. All this insecurity is run away today from what she feels is just a scandal. Making out that it's not true, just around the corner. She is drinking in her head up only to make her see it truthfully. It's hurting me, but I still don't see. So I'll walk one step behind, picking up the pieces as you walk. Stop crossing over, cause I can't catch up. When I'm thinking of giving up, you're running now. How do you suppose I find you? The lipstick and designer labels won't fulfill you. Will you try your hardest to project an image that doesn't suit your personality? Well, don't fuck with me, cause I've been around too long to make you see it truthfully. To make the right impression first, you have to take the mask off. Fancy dress won't help you hide inside. Your heels are clicking over all they're doing overtime. But Dorothy never went the lengths you did to make us see the reality of it all. So I will walk one step behind, picking up the pieces as you walk. Stop crossing over, cause I can't catch up. But I'm thinking of giving up. One step behind, picking up those pieces as you walk. Stop crossing over, cause I can't catch up. I'm thinking of giving up. Cause you know I'm thinking of giving up. Did you know I'm thinking of giving up? Did you know that I thought of giving up? But how do you suppose I find you?
What I've done for this interview is I've picked two or three songs from each release, and the last one I picked from Painter's Ball is called Three Words.
Three Words. Three Words, I love that song, I have to say. Like, it's a song that I don't really get to play very often for some reason, because it feels quite kind of old to me now, but I wrote it really quickly. I wrote it on a train coming from Wales back to London. And I was seeing this boy who lived in Wales, and I was just head over heels and falling in love with him. And I sat on this train and I wrote three words all about him when I was on my way home.
The word has been here longer than both. Us, the old stale lingering smell, the cute little gift shops almost had its day. I've only been there once and I already know it well. Hell, the dust is more than ready. Unlike us, it's flying low beneath our feet. Oh, up the lazy stairwell to conclude that fairy tale. I know that I'm hungry, but I know I can't eat. The simple stuff gets harder, tender is rough. I burn below my weight cause I can't take enough. Three words is all you're asking them, and the kind of shit they say in Mills and Boone. But you're asking me three emotions too soon. The pictures are raging, unlike us. We've still got youth on our side. I was surprised to see a pair of Nikes walking through town, but I guess they got in from outside. Some woman inquired about both of us. Well, I responded with still early days. Her dog looked at me like he knew we were more than just friends and more than just our face. The simple stuff gets harder, tender is rough. I burn below my weight cause I can't take enough. Three words is all you're asking them, and the kind of shit they say in Mills and Boone. You're asking me three emotions too soon.
as books and stories 60 years older than us put together. Well, the flowers are dying, but oh, I'm still trying not to blame it on the weather. The piano keys got more prints than we've got, many songs for many celebrations. I stand next to you as some ghost passes through to another neglected location. The simple stuff gets harder, tender is rough. I burn below my wick cause I can't take enough. Three words is all you're asking. I'm with the kind of shit they say in Mills and Boone. But you're asking me three emotions too soon. You see, I've never been angry with you yet, and I don't know how you're gonna react. I ain't had no suspicious feelings. Honestly, gotta see the way you deal with me when I cry and laugh and joke about the hair on your back. Until then, it's these three words I'll like. Oh, I love you, but I can underestimate the power that's spoken in words. The cute little gift shops almost to this day. I've only been there once and there was a yesterday. I need more dust, need more stories to tell. Need more trust to let my penny drop in your well. Hell, I just want everything. Maybe that's true, but to have everything means to just how do you. And as the simple stuff gets harder, tender is rough. I burn above my wick cause I've got just enough. Three words is all you want from me. All the kind of shit they say in Mills and Boone. But I'll be three emotions ahead of you when I sit you down and say the words I love.
For your early releases, you went by the name Some Lad from Cove. What was that about?
That was, well, Cove is Coventry, which is the hometown where I'm from. And because this was the first album after, and it was kind of a couple years after I'd been in Point Break, I kind of really liked the anonymity of it. Because at the time I was, you know, I'd written this album and I wasn't really sure how it was going to be received. It was the first album I'd ever written, you know, on my own. And there was a part of me that liked having this kind of anonymous approach to it. And rather than going by my own name, I just wanted to create kind of a persona, which then with the second album, I decided to drop because it was becoming increasingly difficult for people to find my music because of the way it was spelt and nobody could pronounce it. And then I was like, I'm making this really hard for myself and it doesn't need to be hard, you know? So I was like, let's just get rid of that name. And I'll kind of just go, you know, under my own name, which was a good decision.
I think so too.
Yeah, but also the kind of the nice thing about it is because it was under that different name, you know, the Painter's Ball, because it was my first attempt really at making music, and I did it on my own, and I had like a band, but I didn't have any kind of big producers or anything involved. It was a very simple way of making an album. You know, I listened to that, and there's a lot of things that I would change, and I think there's some really good songs on there. But the nice thing is now is that because it was released under that name, is that I can potentially go back, and I've thought a lot about this, about going back and re-recording The Painter's Ball under my own name now, and kind of redoing it and rehashing it and making it sound the way I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I think I may be one of the very few folks in this country to have a copy of your EP, The Kitchen.
I think you probably are.
It contains one song found nowhere else. Could you talk about You Got Nothing?
You Got Nothing. That is, I mean, wow, I sometimes forget about that song. That was just a really kind of simple again, a really simple kind of expression of, I don't even remember that I wrote it about anyone in particular, or that it was just kind of this little ode to just appreciating the simple pleasures in life and knowing that you don't have anything, but you actually have everything because of that. You know what I mean? You don't need anything to be something. It's being something comes from a different place. It doesn't matter what you've got. It doesn't matter what material possessions you've got. It doesn't matter your status or any of those things. And kind of an ode to those people who live very simple but really powerful lives, you know, that kind of the cornerstone of humanity.
And the song You Got Nothing from Declan's 2006 EP, The Kitchen, will close out part one of the interview. But please come back for more, as part two will start off with his second album.
Baby, don't you listen to the things that they have to say? Pretend you just don't understand. Baby, don't you worry, there's no reason to hurry. If you want, then hold my hand. Baby, don't you cry inside and feel the need to hide the smile that we wake each day to see. Cause you got everything you need to cause the strongest heart to bleed. You mean so much more to me. You've got nothing, but it makes you something. You've got nothing, but it makes you something. So baby, don't be sad, just pack your troubles in a bag and wander safely out to sea. There'll be monsters, there'll be giants, there'll be dragons in alliance trying to keep your soul from me. So baby, just be hard and deal the wisdom of a card that shows you more than just a queen. Cause you've got everything and nothing, and something's obvious to me that just needs to be seen.
You've got nothing, but it makes you something.